I'm Tom Jameson.
I'm Angelina Blackwell.
Can you guys introduce yourselves here?
Sure. I'm Jen Patterson. I'm the Director of Student Services for the Francis House School District.
And I'm Sherry McGaija, Mental Health Coordinator for the district.
You guys both kind of work along the lines of mental illnesses, you know, helping students out with that kind of thing. What makes you passionate to work for this cause?
So we want our students to be healthy all the way around, academically and emotionally. So we know that if they are in a good space emotionally, then they can perform well academically. And it's our job to make sure that they achieve and succeed at both levels.
And I, as a social worker, that's my profession, just deeply care about kids and how they're doing as a whole child, just like Dr. Patterson just said. And so in the capacity of being a mental health coordinator of over other staff that are seeing and taking care of kids, we want them to achieve and be able to have an enriched education. And by doing that, you have to be physically, emotionally, psychologically healthy too. And that's what we're here for. So I think Dr. Patterson are just unbelievably passionate about families and kids being healthy so that they can achieve their goals.
Oh, yeah. And that's, of course, one of those things that go along with, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we talk so much about with in education, where, you know, as a student, you can't learn or you can't succeed the same way if you're not getting that basic treatment and confidence that you need as yourself.
And oftentimes within Maslow, to know that you need those basic needs, the second portion or the middle portion is a place to belong.
Exactly.
And a community to really feel that you're safe there and mm-hmm. you have voice, you're heard. And those are things that as a school district are really important to us. Mm-hmm. So in addition to achievement, which is the top of Maslow's hierarchy, it's we want kids to feel safe and to know that they can have a place to talk, to be, and it's okay just to be where you are, even if that means that you're not okay. If you're just struggling, that this is a place not just for grades and school and to achieve your life goals, but to really be able to grow and become a healthier person, yeah. Belong somewhere.
Yeah. And that's the humanistic side of it. There's so much more that goes into it, like behavioral, and there's the health side and the medicine side and just basic. There's other, like the other fields of psychology matter so much, and it's good to cover all bases.
Right. You know, and it's crazy. I mean, you have to, of course, take into account both the, you have the physical, you know, stability and safety, but you have the mental and emotional, physical, like the mental and emotional safety and stability that you need, of course. Those two can go hand in hand, of course. If you're not mentally or emotionally stable, then you could do something that would potentially put you in physical danger or physical harm.
And we know that so many more of our students today are struggling with anxiety.
Mm-hmm. It's more prevalent in this generation than past generations.
Nationally, it's on the rise. Depression and anxiety is increasing, and there's many reasons, or the research has talked to us about the reasons for that. It's statistically rising mm-hmm. for our children. And so as a district, we made it a priority to really address that, be able to provide services to students in their day-to-day life to help support them through it.
So how would you say that this has changed from your generation to ours when you guys were in high school? How has this like problem been changed to where it is at now?
So the research will talk about how kids have many, many different caregivers. So like when Dr. Patterson and I were growing up, many of our moms stayed home and we went to school, but we also just came home. Or our mom stayed home for an extended period of time and we didn't go to daycare very early in life. Today, we have a lot of working moms and working families. And so kids are in daycare often from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. And in that time, you might have 12 different adults providing care to you. So that just speaks into attachment and how kids are attaching. The other reasons are, you guys have tons of access to electronics. And I know that Dr. Patterson and I look amazing, but we're a little bit older. And our phones were on the walls with a cord, right? So, and we had to share that phone with everyone in our family. And only until I was in my late teens did we have a party line so that we could have access to lots of people. Kids today, you have immediate access. And so that just has increased your nervous system because it gives you this heightened information 24/7, really. It's always accessible to you. So that electronics portion. The other thing that research really talks to us about is our climate, the culture that we have right now, even politically, or right now we're talking about the coronavirus. It's causing more chaos, just more panic within ourselves. So that increases fear as a population. So those are some of the reasons. There's others that have been researched, but those are some of the big barriers, I think, that are really affecting our kids today.
Yeah, of course. I definitely would agree how social media is really affecting us. I mean, it's as a society making us increasingly more anxious, and because you're not really taught patience the same way that you once were. You know, patience is it used to always, you know, oh, I'm going to tell this person something. Oh, well, I'll see them tomorrow at school. Well, now if I have something really important to tell somebody, well, I can text them. And I can sit there for an hour, you know, anxiously waiting on them to respond. And they can respond at any minute. And it's just kind of like that lack of in-person experience can really affect people. And it's like, in parts, social media is great because it keeps us connected. You know, I have friends right now across the country that I would not otherwise have. I meet people at conventions and I can stay in contact with them. I have multiple friends from Kansas who I have not seen since that convention. You know, I'm getting in touch with the people that I'm going to be living with once I get to college. My roommate's he's in Chicago. I haven't met him, but we're great friends. But on the other hand, it does increase, you know, some of that, you know, anxiety that you can have by talking to people there. And of course, like, I can get to know these people better in person. So it's that mix of utilizing social media to the point where I do meet all these people and I keep these great connections, but also instead of texting Angelina while we're both in the same class, I just need to go over there and have a conversation to her and talk to her and really just use those communication skills that, of course, we learn so much more with, because once you're actually like communicating with somebody, you know, I personally tend to learn a lot more from communications that I have with people and talking to people and those social exchanges and interactions than you can often from a lecture. I mean, I think they, of course, go hand in hand, you know. But like, even when it comes to like math, you know, when I'm working at Freddy's, I have a great friend there named Jeremiah. He loves math. He's going to be going to S&T in the fall here, and he's been going to SCA to really catch up on his education that he lost out on high school. Because he failed a lot of classes, but he had a mind change, and now he's on the right track. And I learned a lot about calculus just from having those conversations with him, mm-hmm. you know. And that's one thing that I find interesting looking back on it, because you learn in different ways, of course, because you can learn just as much from a textbook, but because we just have these math conversations, you know, we talk about integrals and derivatives, and then suddenly I just understand them more. You know, and I feel like that's something that our generation is kind of lost with social media, is those significant social interactions.
And it requires you to be intentional. It requires you to intentionally pause, intentionally have relationships with people versus just having it electronically. You have to make the choice to meet up with friends.
And that keeps you more informed on what you say and your opinions on things, because now I can... Before I, you know, of course, think before you speak. People do that because I don't want to offend anyone around me. And then that makes you think, would this be offensive? Why would this be offensive? How can I phrase this so that it's not offensive? And should I be saying this at all if this is offensive? You know, and it makes you think about that topic. It makes you learn a lot more about this topic and be sensitive to others from different backgrounds, you know, different opinions. And even that one thing, just thinking before you speak, thinking before you say something, can really kind of make you more educated on where other people stand on issues and like where other people are truly coming from.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have healthy emotional status, you're regulated, and so you can wait for that response, and it's not going to dysregulate you. If I'm not as healthy, that waiting can seem like an eternity, and the FOMO that goes on today can really impact our students. And it's that social media that everyone is putting out this highlight reel all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're healthy emotionally, you know that probably isn't the true landscape of their life, that they probably have problems just like me. But if I'm not in a good space and I'm not as healthy, I make things bigger than they really are. And it seems like everyone's life is so much better than mine. And so that's one of the things I think that social media has impacted our students who struggle emotionally, because they struggle with the ability to differentiate between reality and what someone is just putting out there as a perception.
And that's something that at Francis Howell we can really help students with. Our school counselors, our educational support counselors, that's what they're there for. They're there to help teach kids different skills, skills to really think through your thoughts, whether they are rational or maladaptive, but to have skills to really think around and manage those stresses and those overwhelms so they don't accumulate and become potentially a mental illness.
So sticking on that topic there, so who do you think is usually a teen's first contact? You know, when they think they're in that state of not necessarily in a perfect mental state, maybe they're confused with their thoughts. Who do you think their first contact usually is?
Research would tell you that it's your friends, your peers.
Yeah, Thomas and I talked about that earlier, and we know even just from having my own children, from talking with you guys, you go to your friends first.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's the thing, because I spend a lot of time with my friends, like especially as an 18-year-old in high school. You know, I hang out with my friends a lot more than I do my counselor, a lot more than I do my parents, even though my counselor and parents are going to be a lot more educated and a lot more knowledgeable potentially on some of these things. But then again, some of my friends might be a lot more potentially educated and knowledgeable about me and how I feel. So would you think that reaching out to your friends is necessarily the best option for teens?
I think it is a great option, and I appreciate that as your community, you're more willing to look at your friends and say, you might need some help. And there's a lack of stigma there. And so from our generation, I think that you guys have so advanced in your thinking and your acceptance of people and knowing that your mind, your emotions, it needs to be healthy just as equally as your heart or your lungs. And you give it equal balance, the equal weight. So I think we just have to help you as adults know what is correct information and inform you well. So collectively, we need to be working together.
And I think for teens everywhere, because we know that you're going to go to your peer group, you're going to go to your friends, we have to make sure that we're doing a good job educationally, making sure that your friends know signs and symptoms. So I can be a good friend, and I also need to know when this is out of my scope.
Yeah.
I can no longer help. I've listened. I've shared maybe what I would do. But now I feel like my friend is in trouble. My friend needs help. And so I'm not sure that we've always done a good job with that, with the education part for the friends, that here are some keywords, here are some signs when you can still be a friend, but it's bigger than me now, and I need to get this person, my friend, some help because they could potentially harm themselves.
Yeah, I actually have a question. So a lot of kids also have the problem where they don't feel like they have friends, and a lot of depression can stem from that idea of they feel lonely and they feel like they don't have someone there. And so I think it's deeper than a lot of people don't realize the depression isn't just, oh, I'm feeling sad, and it can be that indefinitely, but it's so much deeper to where, oh, I feel sad, but I don't have anyone to go to, and it can grow and grow and grow off of that, and it can just be that one thing, which you mentioned rational, the rational thought, which can imply the irrational thought, and it's then a lot of people can believe that they have that irrational thought. They believe no one can help them because it is an irrational thought, and they don't necessarily know what that is, and they don't want people to think it. They don't want people to be like, oh, I'm being irrational. They don't want people to think I'm over-exaggerating. So I think it's the fact that it grows off of that. How do you think incorporating the counselor and the mental health professionals, how can that be done to the point where students feel comfortable enough to go to someone who, when they don't think they have friends and they don't know this counselor, how do you think that can be incorporated more?
I think part of it is just recognizing that at times it's very normal to just feel sad, to wake up someday and have a bad day, and that's healthy, that's normal, that's typical, that's just, we all experience that. It's when it becomes to where it really affects your day-to-day life, in your mind, in what you're experiencing, and that can be depression. That's a chemical, that's an internal imbalance. And so that's where students need to reach out to adults to help them so that we can get you medication, we can get you therapy, someone to just really talk to. And oftentimes those two things work together. So it helps the chemicals balance on the inside, and then on the outside come up with new thinking, new behaviors, things to do differently. Adults can help then make you feel encouraged or willing to take a risk to find a friend or to attend a social activity that you might not do because you're so deeply depressed that you can't take that step. It's hard to get out of bed. So that medication and therapy goes together. I think more than anything, as people, just realizing that we're complex, and often the solution isn't a one-pronged solution. It's a complex solution, and we have to work together, and asking for help is so okay. We all need to ask for help. Adults need to ask for help. I need to ask for help. We are a community, and we're all here for each other. So normalizing that narrative.
So what signs would you say when people need to go and seek help, or people need to go and help their friends? Because, I mean, exactly like you're saying. Yesterday, I mean, I had a bit of a rough day. I'm not going to lie. I was a bit stressed out. 24 hours of content. All right. Now I'm not promising the best content. I'm just promising content in general.
You're promising 24 hours.
Yeah. So, and
there
I have
be
that.
24 hours tomorrow.
We have a lot of stuff due, potential trips being canceled and stuff like that. So I didn't have a great day. But what are the, but you know, I bounced back. Today I'm having a great day because of that positive mindset.
We would call you resilient.
Yeah. So what would you say are the signs that people lack that resilience? You know, they're either in that negative mindset, or they need help in some other way.
So I think you just have to kind of look at it as to the extreme of it. So is today I'm having a bad day because I can't get out of bed. I'm not hungry. I don't want to eat. I don't want to talk to anybody. Or the opposite. I'm ferociously angry in my thoughts and how I behave. So it's those extremes. And if you're able to rebound out of that, does that make sense?
Yeah. So,
And Thomas, were you asking, what are the signs your friends should look for?
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
in others?
In
yeah,
others.
In
so
others
if,
and stuff.
If your friend said something, when would you know to go get help? Was that your question?
Yeah, more so, yeah.
So it's when it's beyond the scope of asking a friend, how are you doing? And they say, I'm not doing well. It's what's the next thing? Is it, can I help you get out of bed? Can I help you get a meal? And they're still saying, no, I just really can't do that. Adults need to step in, I think, a lot earlier than what we look for in our friends. Because I think as kids, we hold a lot of confidence, a lot. And we want to be a really good friend, and we don't want to break confidence. And there's just this fear of hurting your friendship. And sometimes my observation has been that we let it go too far without seeking help from an adult. So really, I think the best answer is talk. Talk with an adult. There's hotlines that you can call and just talk to somebody and get some advice from a community mental health provider that is anonymous to you to give you greater insight. Or it could be your parent or someone at your school. There isn't a hard and fast checklist.
But I would say if someone says, I don't want to be here anymore.
Absolutely.
If you're hearing those kinds of words, that would be a sign. That would be a warning.
I can't do it anymore. Yeah. I don't want to do it anymore. I feel so much pain. I want the pain to end. Yeah. Suicide and suicide ideation is often completed because people want the pain to end. It's not because people are saying, I want to die. It's that they want what they're feeling to stop, and they can't make it stop. And how they can make it stop is through death. So when people, like Dr. Patterson just expressed, that they're making statements that have finality to them, or they're telling you goodbye, or they're giving things away, that's very severe. That's very significant.
And that's time for you're a good friend at that point when you go tell a counselor, when you go get help, when you tell their parent that I'm so worried about them. Because honestly, in my experience, when a friend tells someone else's parent that, many times the parents are so surprised. Mm-hmm. It's the first they've noticed. It's the first they've heard of it. And their own child, then when we get them in the room, is like, I've been feeling like this for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their parents are sitting there crying as well, like, I didn't know this. You know, why didn't you tell me? Well, I've been talking to my friends. I've been writing it in a journal. And so I think, too, just talking to our friends about letting them know your parents love you, and it's okay to talk to your parents as well.
Kids make posts, too, that I think sometimes watching and listening to other students, they thought it was a joke. They didn't know what was a joke and what was serious. And so when students make posts, it's important to reach out to an adult to let them know about the post, because we then ask about it. And they might need help, and it's better to save a friend and get them help than to ignore it. I think the electronic piece of it and that social interaction is really important for young people to involve adults. We're often not in and on those pages or seeing it. You guys see it first. So it doesn't ever hurt to reach out. You can always repair relationship. And that fear, I think, cripples us from taking steps forward. And instead, it's better to just act and then repair relationship after, because then someone is alive and when your friend is healthy.
And when your friend is healthy, they're going to say, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for telling my mom and dad. Thank you so much for telling Mr. Morrison.
Yeah.
Because I was one day away from doing something terrible. And so many times it was that fear of not telling that kept a friend, but when they're the person who was hurting so deeply is more healthy, they will say, thank you, you saved my life.
Death by suicide is the second leading cause of death in children. It's a big deal. It's not a minor deal. It's a big deal. And we need to take it serious and understand it all around us and be very cognizant of what people say and what they express. And it's okay to ask direct questions to your friends. It's okay to say, Are you feeling hopeless? Are you feeling like you want to die? Are you thinking about suicide? When I say those words, it doesn't make you have those thoughts. I'm asking you those direct questions. And we need to normalize that talking about it and really asking pointed, directed questions is okay. That's what keeps us safe.
Yeah. So you would say we need to start asking questions once their symptoms go beyond the societal norms of being sad or having a rough day or a rough week, because I mean everyone's sad here and there, you know, totally. Of course, but maybe their symptoms go beyond, okay, I just don't feel like talking today. Maybe they're dragging for a day, but then once it goes beyond that, you know, maybe they've been dragging for a while recently, even though they have no reason that is apparent to be sad. You know, once they have any kind of thoughts or they say things that may be obscure, like that's not just them being sad. That's kind of them like having a complete loss of motivation.
Right. Because 90% of kids have a diagnosis that we know of prior to dying by suicide.
Yeah.
And so it's visible. It's there. We just have to get really used to seeing it and asking questions directly so that we can prevent it.
So would you say that you've seen a growth in the societal norms for, you know, talking about subjects like this from over generations?
Within your age group, you're more apt to talk about it. Ours, we still really kept things at home, and we kept it within our house, and we handled it at home, and we really believed that you could fix yourself. And we've come to understand, unfortunately, by watching people and observing people potentially succeed in dying by suicide, to know that that's not true. You need professionals. You need people that can help you beyond your home, and that we need to talk about it. And just even talking about the struggle before a completion, and helping earlier, but that's through talking. That's through openness, a willingness to be vulnerable and be honoring of that feeling deeply is okay.
And I think your generation, I'm just always so, I love high school kids because you celebrate the uniqueness so many times in all of your friends. And that wasn't necessarily how it was when I was in high school. It was very, this is that group. And when I see kids now, it's such a myriad and collection of kids all hanging together, and everyone is so accepting of whatever you bring, your baggage and all, whatever clothes you wear, whatever apartment complex, whatever you bring to the forefront. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Right?
We accept you. And I love that. And I think that's why I'm so hopeful that your generation is going to be healthier, because it doesn't matter your sexuality, because we know that our LGBTQIA students are so at risk. And many individuals in our generation, that was a hidden, shameful thing for them, they felt like. And that put them so at risk for suicide. And I feel like today people are so much more accepting. It's who you are, and I accept you for who you are. And yeah. I think that will help keep kids safer.
That's one thing that I really love about our generation as a whole, but especially something that I've seen around the FHSD school district, is this kind of abolition of niches, so to say. Like throughout my high school career, I've personally had the opportunity to participate in all kinds of clubs. You know, I've played sports. I have been in speech and debate, something, you know, according to the movies is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, Angelina and I are great friends, and she's a student director. You know, we're involved in completely different things. I don't really have major interests in the arts, but that doesn't mean I'm going to put her down just because of her interest. And that's something that I personally love about our generation, and especially people here at the FHSD schools, is we can be more open about talking about our differences.
There's such a commingling.
Oh, exactly. And because of that, I think that can help you know, there's people to turn to.
Absolutely.
In the case of anything, especially, I mean, sometimes people feel like they don't have friends, but there's almost always just, there's somebody there for you. Absolutely. You know, then you may feel like you don't have friends, but other people may feel like your friend. You know, they want to be your friend, you know, that they're there for you. And that's something that I always say, like, whether or not I know you, please talk to me, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like that's the way it is with so many people. Like, I will have people come down the halls here at FHN and they'll talk to me. They'll have a conversation with me and I won't, like, you know, we haven't met before. They know maybe who I am. I maybe know who they are, but we've never had a discussion prior to that. Maybe sometimes I don't know their name. They don't know my name. And I think people, if you're just open about who you are and have conversations like that with people, just about everybody in the Francis Howell School District is going to be willing to talk back to you.
And the adults will really help support you in the barriers that you're facing. So if it's financial or if it's just logistical, that's what we're here for. We're here to help you figure that out and navigate it and provide you with what you feel like you don't have that affects your ability to make friendships and to be involved in act. You just have to reach out to adults. That's what we're here for.
We know that we talked earlier about getting involved in activities, and you mentioned some of the clubs that you guys were involved with, and it's that sense of belonging that is so important for our students. And our students attend school at a higher rate. They have less discipline. They achieve higher. And I don't know the research behind this, but I would say they're healthier emotionally as well mm-hmm. when they have that sense of belonging to their school, because they have that connection and they are going to feel like they have that yeah. person they can talk to, whether it's their coach, their sponsor, the director, whomever it is. That sense of belonging is so important, and we want to start that as soon as they enter high school.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I do love about Francis Howell North is, you know, and FHSD as a whole is clubs are always welcoming. And I always encourage people to join whatever clubs you have any interest in. I mean, you can always leave, switch around clubs. I am in a complete different set of clubs now as I was in my freshman year. But just having that, you know, belonging to a club, then you have, you know, extra reasons to go to school and be at school because you can pursue those interests. I got up at 5:15 today, somehow feeling refreshed. But, like, you know, you couldn't make me, like, there's no way that I'd be able to get out of bed at 5:15 on just any random Saturday without any reason to get up. You know, there's no way you could, you know, I would look at that clock and I would say, there's no point. And I'd head back to bed. And I think that's one of those big things where if you have, you know, those reasons to be excited about school and have that, you know, sense of belonging. And that's something that you really need to kind of, you know, do for yourself, of course, and encourage others to do is just be a part of something, you know, just try to join some club. You know, at North, we have clubs, you know, for everything. We have anime clubs. We have, you know, we have a gaming club, you know, where they compete e-sports, with their yeah. esports. Yeah. And it's, every club is always welcoming, and you can always, at the very least, you know, try out different clubs.
What you're talking about are life skills. Those are forever.
Exactly.
This excitement to get up and want to go to work and have a passion like we do about coming and really loving on kids and caring for them well. So what you're saying is getting up at 5 because I really am excited to go. That's forever. That's a life exactly. skill. That's building resilience and knowing that I can have a goal and I can meet my goal.
So on the topic of, I know we were talking about opening up the conversation about depression and other mental illnesses. Now, not too long, I mean, a few years back, there is a show on Netflix, 13 Reasons Why. You know, that came out, that kind of opened the discussion. Would you say that, you know, certain media like that is beneficial to the discussion overall?
I do. I think that it is. I think it keeps the conversation going, and it elicits fear in people. Maybe it elicits wonder, and I think that's a medium that just helps us keep talking to each other, and it brings about issues that we need to keep talking about, and like the issues of self-harm. Those are things we need to be talking about.
To counter that, do you think there was a lot of discussion behind, especially 13 Reasons Why, that it was very, there was a lot of glorification and there was a lot of highlighting things that should not have been highlighted and that the show didn't go about the idea of it correctly. And personally, I don't think they did it correctly. And I think it affected more people. There was a lot of mirroring what happened in the show that happened in society. And I do think it's important that they talk about it, but what's your opinion on the discussion of the glorification that happened?
I heard that. Mm-hmm. I heard that from people that know much about the arts. Mm-hmm. What I do know is from a parent. And when that came out, I have two teenage daughters who were watching that, and it caused me to have conversations with them that maybe I would not have had with them were they not watching that show. And so while if the show did not portray what happened correctly, I think many times it's a fictional production, but for the conversation just in my own home that I had with my girls every time, like, nothing's ever that bad. Not, you know, you can talk to me about anything. I probably wouldn't have been having that conversation with my daughters were they not watching that. And I was hyper aware at that point in time about making sure they were okay while they were watching it. And then moving forward, have continued that dialogue with them.
I didn't watch it, to be quite honest with you. I mm-hmm. have a teenage daughter, and we didn't watch it for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we had more conversations about what's been my experience and my observation as a social worker, having worked with children my whole career. And so we didn't watch it, and that was a family choice on mm-hmm. ours. So to speak into the gore of it, I don't know, because I don't have firsthand knowledge to be critical of it or to be praising of it. It's just not something that we chose to do. And unfortunately, my kids get to be therapied. we talk about their feelings and all of these issues all the time, probably yeah. more than they want to. So sometimes watching things that are available, we don't do that in my house because we talk about it all the time. and sometimes, like, my daughter was asking me if I was reading some materials that were involving child abuse. And to be honest, I just said I don't want to. I have that already a lot in my mind. And I've seen a lot of that in my career. And I don't need more stories about it. So what's fascinating to her at 16 now at 44 isn't. It's heart-wrenching. And the gore of what you speak to is real life for people. And it's hurtful. And it doesn't leave my mind. So that's true life for some students, and maybe even some students here at North. And so being sensitive to that might be someone's experience, maybe not all of it collectively, but in small ways, children are being hurt. And hurt in many ways. So that's kind of my answer to it, is I just didn't see it specifically myself. But it doesn't underscore the pain that people are experiencing in our world today.
And I think, I didn't watch it, the whole thing either, so I can't speak to that. But from some of the concepts that I think were present, I think there was social media involved.
Yeah, there was.
And I think my memory was that other kids around could have been allies. And so I hope that sometimes kids would walk away when they watch fictional things like that. Yes, it was a horrible event. And I hope they could walk away and see there were people around in this individual's life that could have been an ally. This thing happened on social media, and here were allies. And how can I be an ally to someone? Would I be courageous when this happens? And now that I've seen how this ends, whether it's fiction or not, am I going to have the courage to be an ally to someone, to my friend? And so I hope that that's something that kids or teens would take away, that you, those things that happen on social media, like Sherry said, they are people's real life experiences. And when those things happen, we need to be allies for people that are experiencing that. And it may not be popular to go and report something or to stick up for someone, mm-hmm. especially when you're involved in lots of groups, like Thomas said. If you're an athlete, a drama choir, name a club. If
band.
Band. If you're involved in every activity, you might be reporting an incident on somebody that you're in a club with. But to help and to right a wrong, we have to be allies and we have to stand up for things that are wrong.
So how would you say that we as friends, a close support group, or even, you know, like family, like parents to kids, kids to parents, how can we work to help those who are struggling?
I think one of the biggest things is by listening. I think really just listening and listening actively of what are people really saying when they're not saying it, and watching behavior and just being a good observer, and then communicating with others, reaching out to somebody who might have more information that you do or different expertise to help you.
I think I would say too, when I would notice complete changes. So I think Sherry knows me. I typically look a certain way when I come to work. If suddenly I'm a disheveled mess.
You don't shower.
I'm not showering. Yeah.
Right.
That would be a drastic change. And so when you notice some of those things that are so off and they're happening, it's not just a bad day like, oh, her alarm didn't go off today. Mm-hmm. It's like multiple days in a row, she would come up to me and say, shut my door and say, you know, something seems off. Mm-hmm. Is there something you want to talk to me about? Because I'm noticing this.
So when do you think it's important to realize you need to get help for yourself and turn to others?
I'm not the person probably to answer that because I'm a social worker, and I so believe in we need to talk to each other. And I my core value is to say I will reach out because I recognize that I need others, and that's my core. Those are my core values. So my answer is always reach out all the time. So just recently right now in our topic of conversation at work, it's the coronavirus. And so today I was in a meeting with educational support counselors from all of our high schools and our middle schools. And I said to them, during this time of crisis, who are you relying on? Who are you talking to? This is an anxious time. You're caring for people who are scared and anxious, and you bring about that's compiling to you as a person. So who are you reaching out to? Because you need to take care of yourself. So that's something that's our core value. That's what we believe in. We care for others. We need to care for ourselves. We can't care for others more than we care for ourselves. So as a student, I would say all the time, reach out. Who are your people? Who do you talk to? Who's your go-to first? Who's second? Who's third? And is your parent in there? Is your parent, because your parents love you so very much, unconditionally, and they need to be the person. They need to be one of your people. And how can we as a school help you with that, if that's something in an area that you struggle? You're surrounded by adults that really love you. They wake up every day to come and be involved in your life. So reach out to them.
You know, one of the things, too, is there are various apps. When you guys are a electronic generation and your phones are never far from your hand, there are many apps that you can download from your iPhone, and like Mood Fit. And so you might be able to just do some breathing exercises, check in on your mood, track your mood, journal your mood. There are also suicide prevention apps where you can put in your four people and it'll access your contacts, and you can designate these four people. And so those are some preventative things, I think. Maybe when you're not regulated, you might not know who to reach out to. But if you've put these things in place when you're healthy, and so like when you go to the, I think it's the, Better Suicide app, it'll say, are you okay right now? It asks you before you do this. So when you're okay, identifying these people, who would I put in here? Who would I reach out to? Who would I want this phone to call if I were in crisis? And so I think, like Angelina said earlier, what if you feel like you don't have a large network? Many people have many contacts in their phone. Identifying some of those key people when you're feeling okay is a good thing as well.
To answer that question, rather from not an outside perspective, but it would be important to reach out to someone if you are noticing changes in yourself. And sometimes it's hard to, when you notice, you don't realize those changes in yourself, and it's hard to sort of get at, if you're feeling depressed and you're feeling that low, if you can't get out of bed, if you feel like you don't have anyone to go to, then it's hard to kind of get out of that. And it's hard to realize, oh, I need to reach out to someone. And that can go on for a day. It can go on for multiple days. It can go on for weeks, months. And for some people, they just never get that. And that is what can lead to the suicide. And it can lead to worse things. And so if you are realizing those changes, it takes a lot to reach out to someone and to tell people. And so if you see those changes and if you say those things like, I can't do this anymore, if you don't have anyone to tell to, it's hard to see that in yourself. So if seeing that in yourself is really important. I'd say that's the number one thing. If you especially don't have anyone to go to, if you don't have someone asking you those questions every single day, because a lot of people don't. And that stigma can come in, go to your friends, go to your counselor. A lot of people don't know how to do that. And the vulnerability you talked about comes in because some people, again, don't know how to be vulnerable. And there is obviously fear in being in that vulnerability. So the biggest thing is realizing those changes in yourself and knowing yourself and knowing your emotions. Yeah.
I think mood trackers are a great thing for that.
Journaling.
Even if it's just on paper, you see them with the boxes. And if you're at a 1 or 0 in a blue color for however many days of the month, you're seeing a visual trend.
Yeah. And that's whatever works for you with like self-reflection, I think, is important no matter whether you're consistently happy or consistently sad, no matter what mind state you're in, you know, because I think that's like self-reflection is how I've bettered myself in the past. I think that's how a lot of people tend to mature or make changes is, you look back on yourself. I was different in middle school. What changed about me that I'm now the person that I am today? Is that a better person? Is that a worse person? You know, and I can look back. Today was a good day. Why was it a good day? What did I do or think today that made today a good day? And how can I do more of that to make me more happy in the future? Or on the other hand, why was today a bad day? What happened today? What can I do to prevent this in the future? You know, what can I do to think differently? And that's when you notice, well, it's just how I'm thinking. So how do I get that help on to, you know, other people who are the experts, who know more about this, who are more educated on how I can change my thinking patterns and my mood patterns rather than just continuing on with your life, whether you're happy with it or you're not happy with it.
Do you think gratitude is a good skill?
I do. I think gratitude is a very good skill.
So ending the day, lots of people will end the day with a gratitude journal. And thinking of three things is great, but if you can only think of one thing each day to be grateful for and start journaling that, I think that's a strategy that helps a lot of kids. mm-hmm. a lot of teens, a lot of adults. Many planners have added it to their planning section. You'll see a gratitude section now because even commercial companies have realized that the gratitude and that mindset that you talked about, Thomas, is something that helps everyone be a little more healthy.
Yeah. It's that growth mindset too, right? It's the allowing yourself to say, I can have a better day tomorrow. I'm able to have a better day, and that we all need a mulligan, right? We all need a do-over sometimes. And when you get into those, like Angela, you had talked about like that catastrophic time in life that you're so low, those are the times that you need the people around you to step in and help you and be able to say, I do need help. And that those people are really persistent in helping you, whether it's your parents, your friends, your pastors, your faith leaders, just anyone that's around you, that they step in and you have those people in place and you give them the ability to just even bit by bit help you to rise back up and to get healthier. We all need a support system. So maybe it's those of us just letting each other know, I'm part of your support system. I care about you. And I care about you so much, that's why I ask you questions. And I need you to ask me those same questions too.
One of the things that Sherry and I have been focusing on this year is doing more tangible things throughout the district to normalize this conversation, because it's a conversation that comes with a lot of myths, like if you talk about suicide, we're going to cause more kids to commit suicide, and that's a myth, or there is no research for that sure, supports that. Sure. And so we're trying to do more tangible things. Sherry put on a presentation for faith leaders in the community a few weeks ago. She met with as many youth pastors who would come to talk to them, because they spend a ton of time with our teens through the week in the evenings, just so that they know some questions to ask their teens. We are meeting at Meet the Coaches Night. If you have played a sport or in an activity, you know your parents has had to go to Meet the Coaches Night, and sometimes there are 1,000 parents and students at those. And so Sherry's doing short presentations at those to share some things to look for parents. And we're going to hopefully do some of those same activities with sports coaches, because like youth soccer coaches, youth baseball coaches, because those individuals spend a ton of time with our youth in the evenings as well. And just being able to ask the question, how are you doing today? Because we know that many times people who wanted to harm themselves and weren't successful said that if someone would have just asked me how I was doing, they just needed someone to check on them. So we're trying to provide people with the tools so that they know how to ask kids. We're going to try to get more visual posters up for you all so that you have a line that you can text in the evening, a text line. Mm-hmm. And so someone will be texting you, checking in with you. It's a hotline that's open 24 hours. You can do it in class. You can do it laying there at night. And so just making those resources available to you all so that you know that there is always someone there to help you.
And if there are other ideas, we're always open to ideas of helping just this conversation continue in a healthy way.
Yeah, of course, of course. So how then can we, as a society, whether this be the Francis Howell North community, whether it be the FHSD district or even our generation at large, provide help for those experiencing depression or other mental disorders?
I think it's in increasing your knowledge just about it, about the signs and the symptoms, increasing your knowledge about what resources are available, really knowing and having that prepared before something happens. That's what we talked quite a bit about at the faith leaders conversation, was having a plan before a student says, I need help. And then it becomes a crisis. And then we're trying to figure it out in a crisis. So even if you just had, so we've made cards that have numbers on them, and it's to be in your cell phone case or in your wallet or your purse or your bag or wherever, that you can pull it out and say, here are numbers that are trusted that I can call 24 hours, or I can text. I could even just call and ask questions about my friend or my neighbor that's struggling, just to get some advice. That's what those numbers are for. So I think it's really in the prevention instead of in the reaction.
And I think, too, just normalizing it. Just like if anyone in your family or your friends, if they had diabetes or high blood pressure, those are illnesses just like depression. And we wouldn't think anything about it if we had a friend with diabetes. So if we have a friend with depression, if we have a friend with anxiety, it's normal. And so I think normalizing conditions is something that would go a long way with helping our teens, is that it's okay. And there's medical treatment, there's therapeutic treatments, and it's okay.
Do you guys have any final words you'd like to add?
I just hope that you are appreciative, understand, or encouraged by having mental health supports in your schools. That's just very different than anywhere in our region, anywhere locally, because Frances Howe, really, we care. We care about you and your whole person. And so we love that you're coming to school every day and you're investing in growing. And we want you to know that we stand next to you and we want to help you.
Well, and I just would like to say thank you to Thomas and Mr. Manful, because when I reached out asking, saying, hey, I really want to do some more tangible things. I feel like Frances Howe North is so progressive with the work that you do in journalism, these podcasts. I feel like you reach a large audience. And I wanted to talk about this topic that maybe some districts wouldn't let people talk about with their students or do a podcast on. And so I'm just appreciative of the willingness, the openness to maybe talk about a topic that might be uncomfortable for you guys to talk about, or might not be the easiest thing to do on a podcast. So just the willingness and the openness to get this information out there, to help your friends, to help your family members be more healthy, because that's truly what we want. And we just appreciate you guys talking with us.
I agree. I feel like open communication here really is the key. I mean, open communication, of course, leads to knowledge, like you were talking about, and open, you know, knowledge about these subjects, and of course, knowledge about your peers, and you know, whether it be your friends or maybe your child or people that you don't even know. Just, I mean, open communication about this subject and everything else can really lead to the betterment of our society.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you guys for joining us, of course.